On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the film Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, but if you do proceed and listen without having seen the film, just be aware that its plot will be spoiled for you. Enjoy.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir. I like how you are holding the microphone away from you to bring it then to your face only when it was time to talk and at no other time.
I like to make sure that I have it away from my mouth when I breathe, like your favourite man.
Tay Zonde.
Yes.
I still hate him. I'm still really angry about him for being just so open about the cynical strategy of following to unfollow to get more followers, to follow to unfollow to get more followers, 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 etc. Because what we all want is followers, as if we're all supposed to be Jesus.
I think secretly all of us want to run our own cults, don't we?
Obviously.
It's part of the human condition.
Gordonism. I've heard it's great.
Yeah. Everyone should join my definitely not a cult.
Yeah, if you have to say that it's definitely not a cult, it's definitely not a cult, right?
Yeah, exactly. We are the minimalists, named after the cat.
You apply those design principles to everything. Everything in your house is cat-shaped.
Everything is cat-shaped. You give away all the rest of your possessions to me, of course, for the good of the greater church. It all works out fine.
Mm. You're promised eternal salvation in the form of returning to the ancient Egyptian process of mummification, because they used to mummify their cats, right?
Exactly. You know, that we are corporeal beings, of course, and the physical is relevant. So we must ensure that our physical forms after our souls pass are also maintained in the appropriate manner, as per the teachings of minimalism.
Yeah, the teachings of Mini.
Yes.
And the scratchings of Mini.
Yes, and the floofings of Mini.
Yeah, that's my favourite book of the minimalist Bible.
You must have soft fur at all times. Strict grooming regimes in minimalism.
The Min Commandments.
Oh dear.
Did that just to spite me, didn't you? The mic thing. You did it just to remind me of Tay Zonde.
You of Tay Zonde. Yeah. So how are you anyway?
Yeah, not too bad. And I'm pretty much fully recovered from surgery now. I can breathe. I can smell. I'm a new man.
Excellent. So now is the perfect time to take up smoking.
Yeah. Smoking and farting. Like going to be my two new hobbies. Yeah.
just making sure that you break your records.
Yeah.
Smoking and farting.
You're going to say, just making sure that you break wind. Because some people don't. I don't know how they do it.
Everyone.
I'm pretty sure the Queen's never farted.
Everybody breaks wind.
Nah, the Queen's never farted.
That's only because they're reptilians.
Exactly.
We've established this.
That's the point, actually. Do lizards fart? Lizards,
I don't think they do. I don't think they have the ability to.
Interesting.
Everything comes out of a different kind of hole. So I imagine that there's probably not the same method. It might be some continuous stream of gas.
So they're farting 24/7.
They're constantly farting.
Yeah.
Like a very slowly let down balloon constantly throughout their life.
Oh, that's what that noise was in the background of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Yeah, that's what it was.
It wasn't just the illegal copy that I downloaded.
It's like, you know when you hear crickets at night,
mm-hmm,
chirping away. That's not chirping. It's just the continual farting.
Does that make it better or worse? That, you know, when someone says something like is supposed to elicit a reaction, and then there's nothing except the sound of crickets chirping to indicate the nothingness of response. Is it better or worse that that is in fact farting?
It's infinitely better.
Yeah.
Infinitely better.
I think so too. You'd rather it was that than the crickets were like deliberately trolling.
Yeah, definitely. Like, oh, there's an awkward silence. Ramp it up a notch, fellas.
Yeah, so crickets, right, farting all the time, and they have ears on their knees. They're just the most disgusting beasts, aren't they?
And as with every insect, imagine it human-sized.
Yeah.
If you think, oh, that's not too bad, imagine that, but human-sized.
Yeah. I mean, that's not as bad as a wasp, maybe.
No, a human-sized wasp is not so good.
Would you rather fight 10 wasp-sized humans or, I don't know...
one horse-sized wasp.
Horse-sized wasp, yeah. That's my new metal band.
That's a very good metal band name. Yeah.
Hello, we're Horse-Sized Wasp.
Here's our first song.
All our songs are in drop C.
you got to go drop C, man. I love a bit of drop C.
The tuning that Metallica used on their best album, Saint Anger.
Excuse me, I'll have you know that their best album is Reload. Thank you very much.
Of course, yeah. It does actually have The Memory Remains on it, which is a good song.
That's a tune and a half. And unlike Fran Tick 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 Tock, which I still think is one of the worst songs I've ever heard in my life.
It's shockingly bad.
Yeah. welcome to Metallica cast, everybody.
I genuinely could talk about Metallica all day.
We really could, actually.
I really wish that they didn't play all their songs tuned down because they're too old to sing in the original key now, because I would really like to go and see them, but I find it hard to listen to songs that were originally recorded in E, done in D, just because his voice has dropped so much.
I don't know. I think kudos to them for keeping going and finding a way around it. Because the alternative is them really struggling to hit the notes, and I think that's definitely worse.
You mean like Bob Dylan?
Yeah, because Bob Dylan, he tunes down some stuff now, doesn't he?
Yep. And some stuff he tunes up. You never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, exactly. My favourite thing is, I never got to see them live, which is a shame, but Sonic Youth, when you saw them live, apparently it was just completely different to listening to an album, because they had all of their touring guitars just in random tunings. And they wouldn't like match whatever they were playing on record. So you just get it always in some random tuning, which I think is a fascinating way to go about playing live. I think it's a really sort of bold move.
Yeah, that's part of their thing, isn't it?
Just being awesome.
Yeah. I've got about halfway through Kim Gordon's book. I need to finish it. My neighbour lent it to me.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very good.
It's fascinating. And she has a solo album out this year as well. Which is very experimental, as you probably might expect.
Yeah.
But what else is experimental is the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Indeed.
You say?
Indeed. Definitely. Yeah, it's a Sonic Youth album of a movie, for sure.
Yeah, I think so.
So, I assume you've seen this film before.
Everyone's seen this film, right? Yeah. Yeah, I think
unless,
everybody...
Were you living under a rock in 2004? In which case, you're excused.
Everybody who was at college or university in the same kind of years as we were saw this movie.
Yeah.
And everybody thought this is a beautiful, beautiful story. And all these years later, I think that still kind of holds up, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've lost count on the number of times I've seen this film, so this is maybe the seventh or eighth viewing for me. I don't know that... It like blew my mind like the first time I saw it, maybe. And there is a slight element of, you know, I really loved this film when I saw it when I was a teenager, because it was all influential and I was impressionable, that maybe if I saw it now for the first time, I wouldn't think as much of it. But it still, I think, holds up really, really well. And I think it's actually a very important film from that decade and in the timeline of the director and all of the actors in it as well, all of whom were people who were on the up, but weren't unknown at the time either. So it's a really good time capsule of them, aside from being just a really great film, whoever was acting it.
Yes, it's really a movie that, you're right, it encapsulates that period of our lives, and it's one of those cultural landmarks of those sort of mid-2000 years. But it has a timeless quality to it, and... I wasn't one of those people that fell in love with it, because I've always been a little bit skeptical, I suppose, of those movies that everyone says, oh, this is a beautiful, bittersweet movie. I'm always cynical of bittersweet films.
Was this often... one of the ones you were saying last week, because like the people would say that they like at university to say that they're sensitive people, but they're still going to sleep with you and not call you back. Is this one of those films?
This is one of the like sensitive fuckboy.
I know, Garden State is the main one.
Garden State is the ultimate sensitive fuckboy movie, but this is up there. There's a, you know what I'm talking about, listeners, when I talk about the sensitive fuckboy.
Sensitive fuckboy.
They exist. They're not as they're possibly worse than your regular fuckboy because they're more insidious. They sort of creep into your life.
There's a certain misogyny in, oh, I'm such a nice guy, why won't anyone date me?
It goes from I'm such a nice guy, why won't anyone date me, to you're not like the other girls, and it all comes from the same position of awkward, not masculine misogyny of these people that wear skinny jeans and try and get away from your regular tropes of being a man, but also have many of the worst factors of toxic masculinity ingrained in different ways.
And still, you know, treat women as objects and think that women owe them their time and their attention.
Yes, so they can all go to fuck, is the message of this episode.
They can go to sensitive fuck.
They can go to sensitive fuckboy land. It's the worst theme park.
That sounds even worse than Banksy's Dismaland.
Don't go visit sensitive fuckboy land.
You'll queue for ages.
You'll queue for ages. It will be disappointing when you actually get on a ride. And all of the staff are atrocious.
Yeah, they're awful.
They're awful.
They're all in skinny jeans. They're all telling you about how great Garden State is. They tell you that Zach Braff is somewhere in the park, but you never find him.
It's hard to do things like proper groundskeeping in skinny jeans. So the whole place is a mess.
Yeah, it stinks. It smells real bad.
You know, it's hard to do maintenance in skinny jeans and a beanie and a big cardigan. The cardigans keep getting stuck in the gears. So
beanies,
all of the rides
right,
are,
that's
are
the thing
out of
I was
going
to bring up because was it last week that I dissed beanies and I was like, what is it with beanies?
Yes, yeah.
And then in the opening bit of Eternal Sunshine, he's wearing a beanie.
He is.
And I think it actually kind of looks all right.
Well, that's one of the, it's not one of the tiny beanies, is it?
No, it's not an idiot beanie. it's the sort of normal looking beanie, but it's not quite a woolly hat because it doesn't, there's no poof element. It doesn't poof up, does it?
Yeah, yeah. It's a halfway home, isn't it, between the two?
Yeah. But that's a good beanie.
It is a good beanie. He does all right with it, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And I love that opening scene, actually. It takes, what, like 10, 15 minutes before the title sequence comes in? And then suddenly the title sequence is in, and you're like, oh, okay, this is like a film, and it's serious and stuff and whatever. Whereas you totally forget, because you're so immersed in it, that the title sequence hasn't happened. And I love that. It's really, really good. And actually, that opening 10 to 15 minutes of them, you learn later, of course, that it's them falling in love again after they've had their memories wiped and finding each other again. But it's played as the just them randomly coming across each other and then sort of having a date and then having another date. And then that stuff is all shot on like quite grainy film and it's all quite low key, but it all builds really, really well. And yeah, I just think it's brilliant. And actually, even if the film was just that story, it would have been enough almost, you know?
Yeah. I think it's really well crafted, this movie. And the first time you watch it, obviously it's the whole twist of, oh, the first time you see them is actually when they rekindled their romance, not knowing about one another. And with each watch after that, you know, it loses that magic, that sudden twist, as it were. Not that it's the kind of thing that you don't guess about halfway through the film, you kind of think, oh yes, okay, that's what's going on. But it still comes as a surprise, and you can never recapture that surprise. And often with those kind of movies, you find that on each watch, it loses a little bit of that power behind it. Movies like The Usual Suspects, when you find out that the killer is a talking dog, it completely ruins the rest of the movie for you when you're watching it again and again and again. But this, I think, because of the way that it's filmed and the intelligent way that it's crafted and the intelligent way that it's paced, you almost gain something on rewatches. And it's not the kind of film that you can necessarily put on every month. You know, some movies, naming no names, RoboCop, you could just watch over and over again. But this one,
how many times have you seen RoboCop?
I must have seen RoboCop, oh god, I don't know, at least 50 times.
Wow.
At least 50 times, I think, because we used to have it on video, so I used to watch it on video when I was a kid.
We didn't have loads of other films on video, did you? You had to keep rewatching.
Yeah, you had to keep rewatching them, and like, there's only so many times that you can watch.
Not to sound like a boomer, back in a word that's very hot at the moment.
Back in my day, we only had two films on video, and they were both censored because you couldn't get the full release in the UK, and yep. We liked it.
It was The Bridge on the River Kwai.
And... no, The Great Escape.
And The Great Escape.
Just yeah. That. Just those two. British films about
Funnily enough,
British people.
Even though you know that I hate British things, I love The Great Escape. I think that's a great film. And I had that on a video that I used to watch all the time when I was a kid.
You're an absolute boomer, Paddy. I'm sorry. Loving The Great Escape.
Okay, boomer.
No, I like The Great Escape. I think it's a very good film.
It's really well put together.
Yeah, it's one of those sort of great movies of that era. So yeah, I'm with you on that. We can be boomers together.
We could be boomers.
Just for the rest of our lives. can we talk about the phrase "Okay, Boomer"?
Yeah, it's kind of jumped the shark now, hasn't it?
It has, because people have started writing serious discourse about it.
Yeah, there's probably been an explainer about it in the Telegraph. So
yeah, that's how you know it's gone wrong. But I do saying "Okay, Boomer" to someone, it is not a discussion over their age. It is a discussion over their state of mind, and
yeah.
I think that's...
Boomer is a state of mind.
And that's what's really funny about it, is the angrier someone gets about the OK Boomer phrase, the funnier it is.
Like Gammon.
Yeah, exactly, like Gammon. Gammon is still hilarious, and calling someone a Gammon is still hilarious. And I feel as though maybe that's the one downside of OK Boomerism, is that it's seen a reduction in the use of the phrase Gammon. And the
I think Boomer is the new Gammon, but you can't accuse it of having racial overtones.
People are trying, though, aren't they?
I'm sure they are.
Discriminatory.
All boomers are white. There were no black people until the 70s.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's how most gammony boomers... it's just a screaming pig, really. That's what a gammony boomer is. It's just a pig screaming into the void.
Speaking of screaming pigs, so my dad came to visit earlier this week. And that's not where the sentence ends. I was just like going through Netflix while we were talking about stuff and trying to put on something in the background that would just be like nice, gentle TV. So I put on that show Taco Chronicles, which we talked about before, which I loved. And it was going fine. And then suddenly it switched to like this weird sketch that was from the point of view of the pigs that were about to be eaten. And they were all talking about how happy they were to be eaten. And it got really weird. So we had to switch to Chill with Bob Ross.
Oh my God. I need to watch that episode. That's amazing.
Yeah, so yeah,
I'm getting on board.
It gets dark in some of the later episodes of Taco Chronicles.
If you would like something else chill to watch, Dark Tourist is great. Yeah, we watched all of that a few months ago. It's got what's his name? The New Zealand investigative journalist David Farrier.
Oh yeah.
And he goes around various sort of dark tourism spots, so doing things like going into radiation zones around Fukushima,
oh wow,
going on a Jeffrey Dahmer love-in tour, going around Milwaukee checking out his murder spots for people who love Jeffrey Dahmer, things like that. It's a really interesting show, very reminiscent of like Louis Theroux.
Right.
So yeah, that's our recommendation. A, watch Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind if you've not. B, go and watch Dark Tourist.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, jeez. Yeah, that sounds great. But you know, Chill with Bob Ross is also pretty good.
More like Bob Floss, because he cleans your soul.
It's like candy floss. Well, yeah, he cleans your soul.
We went in very different directions with that.
But we always come back together in the end. That's what's good about this show.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So
Did you see this film in the cinema, Eternal Sunshine?
I didn't see it in the cinema, no.
I didn't either.
The first time I watched it was on one of those, going back to our boomer moments. Oh, do you remember non-widescreen televisions of the,
so if,
the big
if you
backs?
Talk about any, like, remembering anything that is not the technology of now, you're a boomer.
Exactly. Yeah, it was watching it on
boomers.
Watching it on some crappy old television. But it's a lovely film. I really like this film, and
that's a good word for it, but not necessarily a word that you would necessarily choose. The film that does get a little bit dark towards the end, when you start to realize that the thing about them wiping people's memories is not, it appears slick at first, but actually it's not. It's kind of a ramshackle operation, which is really interesting, isn't it? The idea that this kind of essentially like a tech company, like medical tech company, could actually be a bit shit at what they do and be up to no good.
Yeah, it's a very 2019 take for a movie from 2004 that these tech companies might be up to no good. And
it really is.
What I really like about this film is the way that it does delve into those questions. That, hey, what are the ramifications of this technology that's just kind of there? How is this going to impact on people's lives, not just in a positive but in a negative way? And what are the unforeseen circumstances? How can it be abused by the people who know how to use it? And how can it be abused by people who work within the system? So it's really interesting that it goes into Kirsten Dunst's character kind of being forced into having her own memory wiped over an affair with Tom Wilkinson's character, the sort of senior doctor behind it all. Elijah Wood being an absolute creep and preying on people who have just used the service and using the information that they provided to get into their good books and get into their lives.
Yeah.
And you can kind of tell that this is not the first time that he's done this either.
It's not the first time he's been a creep with a soul patch.
No, definitely not. And the fact that it does go into those details is really interesting. And the fact that it shows the confusion left behind by having your memory erased, what seems at first as a positive thing to get rid of these awful circumstances, leads to like damage down the line. And I find it interesting that the movie also delves into how this technology would be used, and it wouldn't be used in positive ways. Like if someone goes through an incredibly traumatic experience, maybe it would actually be beneficial to remove it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of hints at that.
But people are using it to get rid of bad relationships.
Yeah, of course, because everything would come down to that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and not like abusive relationships, but just we fell out and we had a bad argument and we don't want to see each other again, so let's get rid of it. And that's not the most useful way that this tool can be used. And it could be used to actually really benefit people's lives if it was well regulated, if there was checks and balances behind it. But instead it's, oh yeah, we always have a spike around Valentine's Day, and it's clearly people going, oh, I feel bad about a past relationship, I want to get rid of it.
But there is also that woman in the doctor's waiting room who has a box full of stuff to do with her dog. And she's like sheds a single tear in the waiting room. That gets me every time.
I mean, I don't want to be callous, but animals die and it is painful.
What?
But
how dare you?
It is painful. I've been there. It's very sad. But sometimes you need to roll with that and recognize that death is a part of your life and death is a part of all our lives. And one day we will all meet the sweet embrace of death, that cold, dark nothing.
Colder what was it than... Samuel Beckett said? They give birth astride of a grave, or something.
They go eat cake in hell. That's what he says.
I'd go to hell if there's cake.
Yeah, man. But
but what's really clever about the whole memory loss thing is that, as you say, there are so many unanswered questions. And usually when we talk about a film that has that kind of dystopian element, I'm always the one being like, I want more, I want more, I want more. But I don't want more in this film because it handles it perfectly, because it's a love story. It's a romance that perfectly understands how to use those elements to augment its story in terms of both plot and characterization, and it nails it as well. There are so many things that you do wonder, but you also think it doesn't matter because it wouldn't have made a difference to Joel and Clementine's story. And that's why it works, because, you know, you always wonder, like, how is he not aware that that technology exists? Because if that would be such a huge technological advance, they would be everywhere and everyone would be aware of it, like in Timer. But it's just this like little backroom operation, and that element of it is really, really strange, and it adds to the overall strangeness of the film, which, you know, is meant to present this picture of what was happening inside his head. And especially as a lot of it, actually, the narrative is sort of, there are the weird bits where he's like, he's under the table and he's crying and he's a kid and an adult at the same time, like in a dream and all that stuff, which I think is great and works really, really well. But yeah, the idea of it all happening inside his head makes none of that stuff really matter, but the romance still works, which is the key thing.
Yes, for sure. And when you said that it's their story, that's exactly right, in that this is focused on two people's personal sort of experiences of this technology and how it impacts on their relationship and how it builds upon that as a romance story. So you don't necessarily need that big detail behind how it works and everything like that, because it's these two outsiders going in and how this impacts on their lives. And of course it goes through a very short time period as well, in that, you know, this movie is effectively, the vast majority of it is inside his mind in one night. And that's how it works really well. That focus allows it that room to breathe without having to get bogged down in the details. And you know, I would be interested to see more of this world, but I don't think it needs it for the story that it's telling here.
No, there's definitely enough detail there to make it interesting and to carry it off as a sub 2-hour film. It gets so much done in an hour and 45. I felt like it was a much longer film.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Because it leaves a mark, doesn't it? It really mm-hmm. does. And you know, you can't really say much better about a movie than that, can you? If it leaves this much of an impression.
No, it definitely make you think.
Indeed. And it's got loads of great people in it as well. I think everyone is perfect in this film.
Yeah. Elijah Wood, as you say, is perfect as the young creep doing his thing. Mark Gruffalo does his Mark Gruffalo thing. But no, he's actually really, really good as well. It's the kind of low-key, sort of vaguely bemused and funny tech guy doing his thing with the memory thing.
Yeah, I really love Mark Gruffalo a lot. I think he's a very versatile actor. And, you know, everyone loves him as Captain Green Man, which is his superhero name.
Is he Captain Green Man?
He is Captain Green Man. He gets angry and shreds his clothes and beats people up.
No, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he...
I thought it was some main handsome man, Eric Banana.
it was Eric Banana, then it was Edward Norton, and now it's him.
Edward Norton was the Hulk?
He was the Hulk in one movie, yeah.
No, surely.
Yeah, so the first movie of the Marvel Cinematic Universe with the Hulk in, it was Edward Norton, but then he didn't come back, and so they recast for Mark Ruffalo.
Huh. Why didn't he come back?
Don't know. He's
probably off doing something good.
He was sick of being covered in avocado, which is how they made him. It wasn't CG.
I can sympathize with that. I've been covered in avocado a couple of times this week because we've been feeding it to the baby.
It wasn't CGI. It was all prosthetics in that movie. And so it wasn't actually rubber or plastics or anything like that. They were just carving out avocado after avocado and just mushing it onto his skin to make him big enough for the scenes.
Yeah, and it had a real effect on the world's avocado supply.
And he was like, I've had enough. I'm done now.
You wouldn't have that now, would the millennials, with their avocado toast? They wouldn't give it up to support the Hulk, would they?
No, they would not. You know, goddamn millennials, get off my world.
Yeah, so basically anyone who remembers anything is a boomer. And anyone who likes new things or is young is a millennial. Those are the two genders.
Yeah, even though millennials are now old.
Yeah.
We're now into Zoomers, aren't we? Zoomer territory.
Mm-hmm.
God bless our wonderful young people who are going to change everything.
Yeah.
Please change everything. We failed.
Yes, please do.
Gen X failed. grow up and get rid of all of the awful people.
Yep, get rid of emissions, you know, help the planet stay green and stuff. The thing is, they actually want this to happen and they believe in it.
Yeah.
So I have faith. I have faith in the Zoomers.
I don't. We're all going to die.
Well, there's that. But I mean, I think they're going to make it slightly less bad before we do.
I hope so.
Either that or they're all just on TikTok and they're ignoring everything.
I mean, that's
but
definitely...
But that's what a boomer would say.
That's definitely the better option, though. TikTok's great.
Is it? I don't even know what it is.
TikTok's... What was the old short video format app that was
Vine?
Yeah, it's basically Vine.
All right. Well, what was wrong with Vine?
Didn't it get bought out by somebody who then killed it?
Yeah.
I think that's what happened to Vine.
That's what happens to us all.
We all, one day someone just turns up and says, I've now acquired the rights to you, and now we're going to shelve you indefinitely. And that's what happens.
That would actually make for quite a good high concept thriller.
Yeah.
This is going to be our new film, isn't it? After Wizard Cop.
Yeah, after Wizard Cop, we go all Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Dark Window, it's called.
Dark Window.
And yeah, everybody owns the franchise to their own rights. Like indentured servants, basically. It's like futuristic indentured servitude. And eventually people can be like, I will buy the rights to you as a franchise and your intellectual property. But then you've got to maintain your worth to the company that's making you.
Like if you're like one of these YouTubers, these TikToker types, someone comes along and says, I'll give you $1 million for the rights to you, but then it turns out to be a bad deal.
Yeah, because they say, you know what? We don't like your content. Now you're going to make vines about crayons instead or something like that.
Yep. Or it's just the constant pressure to create content means that you have to keep it up and then you can't do it anymore. And then they sell the rights to you to some like businessman in Uzbekistan.
Yes,
who wants
exactly.
to turn you into like a troll bot farm. Hey, this is actually not bad.
This is a Black Mirror episode
yeah,
in the making,
sure.
definitely. This is
far as a choose your own adventure.
You could, yeah. Yeah, do a little choose your own adventure.
That'll get the boomers on side. They love choose your own adventures.
Yeah, a venture capitalist tries to buy the rights to you. What do you do? You say no because those people are leeches. Get out. We hate you. The official stance of Big Boys Podcast.
Episode over. 5 stars, Entertainment Weekly.
5 stars. So, this movie, right, I really like it, Paddy.
I think it might be Elijah Wood's best role.
What I like is that Elijah Wood did this after Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, everyone was like, it's Frodo with this whole pack.
And Elijah Wood's career post Lord of the Rings is actually very, very interesting. So, you know, you'd have thought he'd... And people do sometimes find it difficult after they've been in such a big series of movies to continue doing sort of big films. But what I think with him is that he's deliberately chosen all of these interesting movies outside of that. So, you know, you've got things like Sin City or Maniac, where he's played evil serial killers.
Did you see Everything is Illuminated?
No, I haven't. I've heard it's
good.
That
is a film that I really, really love, that he is really, really good in. I've read the book as well by Jonathan Safran Foer. It's mostly autobiographical, slightly embellished story of him like going to visit his, like discovering a journey of self-discovery about his family in Eastern Europe. And the singer from Gogo Bordello is in the film playing like his, the guy who's showing him around. It's just incredible. It's so funny and so moving. And yeah, I should watch that again. I haven't seen it in years, but I remember it being very good. And Elijah Wood's really good in that.
Oh, amazing. And he turns up in films like I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, which I don't know if you've seen that.
No, I have not.
It's like an offbeat comedy drama about sort of vigilantism, basically.
Okay.
So Melanie Lynskey, who I don't know if you know Melanie Lynskey.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone breaks into her house and steals her stuff. And so the cops won't help her. So she wants to go and find out who did it and get her stuff back. And Elijah Wood is her neighbor with nunchucks who wants to help her. And so they go on this kind of journey together to try and get this bat, but it unravels into more and more of this sort of criminal underworld. It's a really interesting, funny film.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's really good. Directed by Macon Blair, who is he's an actor and he's been in lots of great stuff like Blue Ruin. In fact, that's a very weird tie-in because Blue Ruin is the name of her hair color in this film. But also in Green Room as well, the movie about Nazi punks, yeah, which is awesome. So he's had an interesting career, and I really like that he's chosen so many different movies after Lord of the Rings, when it could have been quite easy for him to sort of go into less dangerous territory than these yeah, very different films.
But this is a different film for everyone, and that's what's really good about it, actually. It's all people that you know from other stuff, so that when you see them, you're like, oh yeah, I know it's Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, but he's being like a serious guy and doing the serious stuff, but there is an element of humor to it. There is an understated, good-natured humor to this film that carries it off and means that it doesn't end up being totally depressing and bleak, because it's the kind of thing that very, very easily could end up being so bleak. But because it's Jim Carrey, you can't help but laugh at some of it, even though he's being super serious.
Yes.
Like when he's the kid and he's crying in his pajamas and stuff, that I do actually kind of find that really, like, weirdly hilarious.
Yeah, there are moments that are very, very funny and that are meant to be very, very funny. It's a film that manages to, I know you hate the idea of like dramedies.
It's just a stupid thing.
In general, but this is the perfect example of how it can work very well, because this film is funny and it makes you think and it makes you feel those emotional depths that a drama can do. So it really manages to pull it all together well. I think it's so well crafted.
It does. I'm trying to think with Jim Carrey if he'd done anything like this up until that point.
Yes, so he'd done The Truman Show.
Of course, that's like his big one.
Which really sort of fits the same bill in terms of being having those comedic moments, but also having those wider dramatic overtones. And in fact, the science fiction element as well all works very well.
That's a great film.
Obviously, The Cable Guy. One of my faves. I really unironically love and unapologetically love The Cable Guy. I think that's a great film.
So weird.
And then he'd also done Man on the Moon as well by this point.
That's so good. All of this stuff is so good. It's really, really, I really love Jim Carrey, and I think some of his early work is just so good. It pains me so much that he's like an anti-vaxxer and has all this stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Usually with people you can like separate them from the art, but with him, for some reason, I find it really difficult because he's Canadian and he started out in Canadian comedy clubs and he worked his way up. And I feel like there's a real like genuineness to him, but yeah, that's just so disappointing.
Yeah, there's a lot of that though, isn't it? As some people are they hold very strange views.
And I mean, there's also Bruce Almighty as well.
that's worse than being an anti-vaxxer. But yeah, this is kind of in that interesting time period in Jim Carrey's career where he was doing these sort of films. So from The Truman Show onwards, you know, he was mixing it up where he was doing movies like Bruce Almighty, but also things like The Majestic as well. So all of these interesting movies. And he's still doing some strange stuff. So he was in The Bad Batch the other year.
What's that?
Which is a kind of dystopian love story, offbeat movie starring Jason Momoa, who is awesome and I love. Do you know Jason Momoa?
Yeah, Aquaman.
Yes, yeah. He's one of my favorite people.
He seems like a really cool guy. He seems so genuine and so nice.
On his Instagram, there was this video of him throwing an axe, hitting the middle of the target and immediately chugging a beer. And I thought, that is the most on-brand thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, he's excellent.
Yeah, he's great. And he was in... well, he's going to be in the Dune movie, which is another reason why I'm really excited for the Dune movie. He was also in the Conan the Barbarian remake that came out a fair few years ago now, which is nowhere near as bad as people made it out to be. It goes on a bit too long, which is the main problem. So it's a very, very lengthy, and it feels lengthy, but the vast majority of it is basically him laughing maniacally and cutting people's heads off, which is exactly what you want from a Conan the Barbarian movie.
Yeah, why not?
So yeah, it was all right. It was all right with old Conan. Jason Momoa, that's the one thing that's missing from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Can you imagine if he played Tom Wilkinson's role, like the really serious old doctor?
Yes,
just medical guy, just trying to like save his company and his technology, and trying to be on top of it.
Yeah,
and trying to love his wife and not to fall in love with Kirsten Dunst. And yeah, he's just there.
I mean, that would have been ideal, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that is, as an aside, that is such a good subplot. That happens only over sort of 2 to 3 scenes, but actually it's her, Kirsten Dunst's character, Mary, who reveals the deceit and the thing of the, she writes to all the patients and tells them that it's happened, and that all because of her, the like sort of a previous affair that she had with him that she was forced to have her memory erased, and you only get little snippets of that, but the snippets are enough to make you realize that it was absolutely massive, and it's so understated and so well done.
Yes, it's really great, and it's another element that works fantastically on repeat watches, because when you watch it back again, you recognize actually, even from her early scenes, that there's, at the first time you watch it, you think, she's got like a crush on him, or you know, something like that, or there's this real admiration for what he's doing, but in reality actually it's a lot deeper than that, and it's a lot darker than that, and the way that they framed it was very, very well done.
His wife obviously drives around to see what he's up to, and then she sees them kissing, and then they come out and they're all kind of having an altercation, and the wife goes to her, "You can have him, you did." And that's like a huge moment, but you immediately know what that means, but that there's so much there still that it could mean. Yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah, so that's great. I'm a big fan. And I don't know.
And she dances with Mark Ruffalo in his tighty whities. So that's the most important thing.
And I think as well, all of it works towards the main framing of the movie and the main framing of the technology behind the movie. So that's... And that kind of cohesiveness to it is so important because of the way that it's shot, and because of the way that the story itself, in terms of the individual story beats of they go here, they go there, they go there, is all quite abstract. And so having it be thematically strong across all of those story arcs was very, very important. And it really manages to match that.
It's just really, really well put together. And it's really well shot as well. Yeah, all the scenes and the angles are really, really good. It's like, you know that it's in New Jersey, but it could be anywhere. It's kind of a small town. And you know that they're not far from New York, but it still feels like it could be a million miles away.
Yes, yeah. And it's... Yeah, and I like the atmosphere and the weather and the bleakness of it, I suppose. It all works towards that overall feel of kind of not necessarily helplessness, but a kind of desperation that matches each of the characters within it as well. It's a lot of desperate people, really. A lot of yeah. Aimlessness, a lot of questions.
But that's why it's so good that it's Mary who's the one who fights back against the desperation, and she gives that to the rest of them as a gift.
Mm.
That's really a really unexpected and really good twist.
Yes, yeah. And and I think the end of this movie is perfect as well. So, you know, if you've listened so far and you haven't seen it,
it's too late for you.
It's now. Too late for you now. So we're just going to plow on ahead. But the way that it's sort of, they're clearly going to try again with their relationship on this kind of fresh slate where they're getting to know each other all over again, with the understanding that last time it didn't end well, and just accepting, well, if that happens, it happens. And I think that's it's a really interesting idea, because it's not painting it as these two are star-crossed lovers who are going to be together forever. And I like the fact that it's got that realism in there, that, you know, it's not about fate, and it's not about souls, like souls meant to be together and soulmates. It's just
our souls at night.
our souls at night. It's,
which incidentally my dad watched and said was good.
Yeah, I want to watch that at some point.
We'll get to it.
Yeah. But instead, it's grounded in that way, isn't it? It's, you know, people are flawed and relationships don't necessarily last, even if the people involved in them are, you know, work very well together. And there's equally no reason that it won't work this time for them either. It's not as though their fate is sealed, that it's not going to be a working relationship.
Exactly. Even in the intervening months or years that they've had, it could still work. You know, it's still a different time. They're different people. But it does then end the film on a question, which is that if you knew that you'd had that relationship previously and it hadn't worked out to the extent that someone had tried to delete it from their memory, would you still try again? But then, and then to do so against that backdrop is an act of courage. So the film ends on an act of romantic courage, but one that's still understated because, as you say, it's grounded in that realism. And I really like that.
Yeah, that's really great. I think it's hard to point to a perfect movie. I don't think such a thing exists, but you can structure your film in a way that manages to remove as many flaws as possible. And that's what this film does. It's hard to look at this and think, I do this differently, I do that differently, apart from Jason Momoa obviously should be in it. But apart from that, it's...
Well, he should be in everything.
exactly. If your movie's not got Jason Momoa in it, you're not getting any kudos.
He can be in Dark Window.
Yeah, he'll be in Dark Window. He can...
Is he going to be a good guy or a bad guy?
He'll be a good guy.
Yeah. So he's the one who's like running away from the people who think they have his rights, and there's some kind of legal thing where it's like, do they have the rights to him? Don't they? He has to run away and shoot some people to work out whether they do or
he's not. He's
not
the main good guy. I think we still need to cast the main good guy as someone else. But he's like the resistance person.
The resistance leader.
Yeah, exactly. So someone's like trying to get away from the fact that someone's trying to eradicate their status. And Jason Momoa just turns up and says, get in. And they drive off in a big Humvee.
And they've got this whole like underground thing going on.
Yeah, exactly. Where there's no real sort of main coordination, but it's clear that he's like the leader of it to try and allow people to live their lives normally. Without fear of being erased or downsized. Or
he's like a rebel figure you could follow.
What will we call it? There has to be some kind of evil corporate word for when people's like status is no longer required. Should we call it synergy, maybe?
Synergy.
Like, oh,
that sounds a bit like Sensations.
It's like, yeah, you know,
on the poster, yeah, from the people who brought you Sensations
and Wizard Cop.
And Wizard Cop
comes Dark Window. Yeah, you can imagine like someone being like,
get ready to synergize.
Yeah, get ready to synergize. It's like you can just imagine being brought into a boardroom and there's these faceless like people in suits and just like, you know, your numbers are down, so you know we only use synergy in circumstances like this, but we're merging your channel with Karen's. And then it's like some kind of horrible body horror thing where they merge these two people together in some machine.
Yep, and all their fans are like, yay, we love it.
Yeah, oh, we love it. We love Nigel and Karen's new channel.
It's Niren. My favorite. Niren.
Yeah.
And the boardroom is literally just 10 Alan Tudyks
yes.
sitting around a table.
Yeah, yeah. I'm on board with this. I think this could be a bizarre and horrible Cronenberg-esque dystopian movie.
This is our most daring movie yet.
Yeah, this is the one that everybody hates and that ruins our careers, but then in 20 years time people are like, you know what,
that was actually good.
Yeah, you know, Wizard Cop gets all the plaudits, that's the one that swept every Oscar. but Dark
there'll Window. Be a really nice like editorial written on RogerEbert.com, not by Roger Ebert because he's dead, but by whoever it is who weirdly still owns that site, like calling for a critical reappraisal.
Yeah will appear in multiple BuzzFeed listicles about movies you should give a second chance.
Yeah, it'll be like, oh, remember Dark Window? Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
I actually did think it was good at the time.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I did. I loved it. Yeah. What we're saying is we're going to be the showgirls of 2024.
I've never seen it.
Oh, mate, Showgirls, it's a movie.
It's a film?
It is definitely a film. Right, okay, what else have we got to say about this?
Kate Winslet, also very good. Going back to what we were saying about it being sort of a different film for everyone, yeah, I think her performance in this is outstanding and really good and so believable, and perhaps the most realistic of them all, actually, even though she's the one who's sort of a bit less of a straight-laced type. You know, I think she plays it really, really well as this kind of extroverted, impulsive character, but it still somehow manages to make that understated.
Yes, it manages to, and I know that some people have sort of lumped her into the manic pixie dream girl boat, but I think there's a depth and nuance to her character which is missing from those other films. So I think it actually completely, it's not fair to put this in the same boat, and I think the writing of her character is that much better. But you know, it wouldn't be anything without her performance. She's great in this.
Yeah, she's really good.
And also David Cross is in this movie.
Yeah, David Chipmunk Cross. He asks if they want to smoke a joint.
I do like that. on his IMDb page, there's no mention of the chipmunks on there.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't come up in That's Known weird. For, which I'm really pleased about. So Arrested well Development, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Mr. Show, and Megamind is the other one that shows up.
Megamind.
Yeah. He was the voice of somebody in Megamind, apparently.
Okay. He's great. Did you ever see that sitcom he did, The Increasingly Poor Decisions of Todd Margaret?
No, you've told me about it before, actually.
It was surprisingly good and quite underrated, I think. It was his baby, I think. It's him and, like, weirdly, the guy who plays Neil in The Inbetweeners, and as this kind of odd couple business partners. I can't even really remember it that much, but it was really, really, I remember it being really good at the time.
Okay. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. And also, whenever people bring up the Alvin and the Chipmunks, he's always really acerbic, and he's just like, I've still got bills to pay, man. Fuck you. which I really like.
Yeah. You know what? It's fine. You can take these roles to make money. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all good.
Kids love chipmunks.
They shouldn't love Alvin and the Chipmunks, though.
Hey, the cartoon was good.
Yeah, that was fine, but the movie can go suck an egg.
Yeah. A rotten egg.
Exactly. So yeah, have we got anything else to share about this movie?
Let's see. Kate Winslet's good. Tom Wilkinson, very, very good. Being him, but he's always good in everything, isn't he?
I like him a lot. He's very
good. And
he's
in a lot of British things, so obviously that's not good because British things are bad, but in this he's good.
Get out of here, British things.
Yeah.
What have we ever given people? Nothing. We give them Brexit.
Yeah.
Brexit and turnips.
Brexit and turnips.
Which is incidentally the name of my metal band.
Yeah. The co-headlining with, what was it I said? I can't remember. I've forgotten. David Cross and the Chipmunks.
David Cross and the Chipmunks. Yeah, that's it.
Incidentally, there's a chipmunk version of Honky Tonk Badonkadonk on YouTube. I'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Why?
Why?
I think that was in the fifth movie or whatever, probably. I don't know.
that's the, one of the worst things I've ever heard in my life. I can't believe it.
Have you noticed, by the way, that I've started using Honky Tonk Badonkadonk as our theme music in every episode?
I have.
The only reason for that is that I deleted one of the old files that had the like clip of the old theme tune in it, and the only one that I had was the one where I'd used Honky Tonk Badonkadonk, so I just lazily left it in. Now that's a thing. But now I kind of like it.
Yeah, so do I.
Do you think we should keep it?
Maybe. I think maybe we should mix it up so sometimes we use it and sometimes we don't.
Okay, I'll find something else. I'll find something else that we don't have the rights to.
Yeah, well, yes, exactly.
And then we'll get sued for because we're obviously making shitloads of dollar off this podcast.
I mean, we are making so much money. We're taking home cash. over this.
We're making enough money that if Alvin came to us and said, do you want to make a Chipmunk movie, we'd be able to say no.
Yeah, we'd be like, no, get out, we don't. But seriously, if you want to put us in the next Chipmunks movie, yeah.
I'm well up for it. Go on, Alvin. I know you listen every week.
Give me that money, Alvin and the Chipmunks.
That sweet Chipmunk dollar.
Who's your favorite Chipmunk?
Alvin.
You like the bad boys?
No, I think I'm a Theodore guy.
Yeah, Theodore is the best.
No, we can all agree that Simon's the worst, right?
Simon
is an idiot.
Yes. Well, but I think the problem is that he wasn't an idiot, was he? He was the intelligent one. And
he's a nerd.
And the smart ones in those kind of shows are never the best. Who watches Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and likes Donatello the best? No one. Is the only saving grace of Donatello is that he's better than Leonardo, because everyone knows that Michelangelo is the best Ninja Turtle. Yeah,
obviously.
He's got nunchucks, aka the best weapon. He eats the most pizza. He is the most radical dude. And obviously, the most radical dude is always the best.
Radical jokes.
It's why Jeremy Corbyn is great, because he's the most radical
left winger. Because he's a radical dude. The absolute boy. The radical boy.
He's just there skateboarding around his allotment.
Yeah. Wikipedia's thing of Alvin and the Chipmunks says, the group consists of three singing animated chipmunks, Alvin the mischievous troublemaker, Simon the tall bespectacled intellectual, and Theodore the chubby shy one. I mean, I don't think anyone comes out of that well.
No. I think that's doing a disservice to Theodore. We stand Theodore on this channel.
Yep. All about Theodore. We should do a separate show all about Theodore.
Welcome to the Theodore cast.
Yep.
No. Each episode is 5 seconds long, just us going, still like Theodore? Yep.
He's still the best chipmunk.
Still the best chipmunk? Yep.
Yep. Oh, we could do a separate podcast where we go through all of the Alvin and the Chipmunks films, animated and otherwise.
We could do, but I really don't want to. I'm sorry. I just really don't want to do that. I'd watch the old ones. Give me the old Chipmunk movies.
Yeah, for sure. The 80s ones were great.
Yeah. So have you got anything else to share about this movie?
No, I think that's it. It's good. Michel Gondry is very good as a director. He's done some music videos. He's done some films. He's done a whole bunch of stuff. Has a great aesthetic and sensibility, but is clearly willing to tell a great story in the way that it needs to be told. Can't knock it.
Yes, yeah. It's great. This film's great. Go watch it if you've not.
Yeah, if you've not seen it, this is a film I demand that you watch now.
Yeah, go watch it immediately. I don't care if you're listening on your way to work.
Yeah, call stop in what sick. You're doing. Yeah.
Call in sick.
Catch a train to Montauk.
And fall in love.
Yeah, that's what this film will help you do.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. No, it was a very good palate cleanser after watching Love is Blind, which was rubbish.
How dare you?
Which is very confusing and strange and stupid.
Yes, it is all of those things, but still, how dare you?
All right. Do you have trivia?
Trivia is, I like this movie.
Cool. Very good.
I'm sure there's. Let me look some up now. I have an.
I got a trivia. I thought you would have had it, but Claire told me this, which is that you know there's like a couple of clips where there's like a circus with elephants and stuff, or it's like there are elephants in the street or whatever. There's some kind of big elephant party going on.
Yes,
that was not supposed to be there. They just randomly walked past it during filming and were like, "Let's get on this," and it just happened to be there, and they kept it in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's cool. Just as a kind of thing for their relationship.
Ah, very nice.
A little bit of, yeah, showing them having fun. Why not?
I'm digging it. Random elephants.
Everyone digs an elephant, right?
Yeah, particularly when it's a surprise elephant.
Yeah.
So, it never forgets. It remembers everything. It would not be very good if they tried to use the machine from this movie on it, because it just would not work. Oh, are you still there?
Yep, I am. Sorry, I dropped out for a second.
I suddenly went very quiet on the other line.
I made the mistake of trying to download a a very, very large app half an hour before we started recording, and it still hasn't finished doing it. So my system's a little bit overloaded.
All right, I will keep this brief then.
No, it's good.
So according to Mark Ruffalo, the scene where Stan and Mary dance in their underwear over an unconscious Joel was improvised.
Seems like that kind of scene, but great. Why not?
Then another bit here. In the tape recorded sessions, Jim Carrey accidentally ripped the tape recorder when he got too into the scene and threw it across the room.
That seems like the kind of thing he'd do.
Soz guys.
Get too into the scene.
A sex scene with Mark Ruffalo and Kirsten Dunst was shot but was cut due to length. And I actually quite like that they don't have that in there.
Yeah, it's not necessary, is it?
Yeah, I think it. I don't think that would have been necessary. So they made the right call there. Here's a good bit for you, as well for us. Before Jim Carrey expressed interest in playing Joel, Nicolas Cage was considered for the role.
No way.
Yeah.
No way. I'm trying to picture it, but I can't. I think part of it is actually because Jim Carrey's performance is so good that it's hard to picture anyone else. But Nicolas Cage? Really? That would have made it a totally different film.
It would have been very different.
Nicolas Cage crying under the table in his pajamas.
I want the Cage cut.
I kind of want this to happen. We need to get it remade. The remake of this with Nicolas Cage is going to be the film that redeems us after making Dark Window.
Yep, yeah.
It'd be like our second chance.
Definitely. And then the final bit of trivia. This movie was the inspiration for the indie video game To the Moon. Have you ever played To the Moon?
I have not.
It is super great. So it's about these doctors who, there's this guy who's dying, and they're using this new technology to give him artificial memories. And it's a really powerful, quite emotional video game. And so it's interesting to see that the inspiration for it came from this film.
Wow, that sounds great.
It is really good. I recommend everybody, hey, watch this movie, go and watch Dark Tourist, and go and download To the Moon, because it's awesome.
Yeah, that's loads of recommendations.
Yeah, we've got a lot on the go here.
Nice. How are we going to rate this?
Oh, how many memories would you erase?
Of watching this film.
Of watching this film.
No, I wouldn't erase any of them. I would erase 17 memories. Yeah.
Oh, very good. And I would erase 18 memories.
Yeah, it's high. I don't know why I can't push it up even higher, I guess, because I didn't necessarily even really have a bad word to say about it. So,
yeah.
But that just feels right to me.
Yeah, that's the thing. That gives it a 9 out of 10 in my book. And it is amazing, but I don't know. There's something holding me back from going full on higher than that.
Yeah, it's maybe not necessarily like a life-changing, mind-blowing, everything film, but it is extremely good.
Yes, yeah, it's great.
And holds up.
It does hold up really well, which, you know, is a real testament to the quality crafting.
Maybe I'm just marking it down for the creepiness of Elijah Wood's soul patch.
I'm marking it up for the soul patch.
That's what you like.
I love a good soul patch.
Right. What are we watching next?
So I want to go down a similar route. So.
So it's Garden State.
Well, I was thinking.
Do you mean, a sensitive fuckboy route?
Yeah, I want to go down the sensitive fuckboy route, possibly down another sort of magic realism route as well. Those kind of fantastical elements.
Cool.
So I'm going to give you three choices. I kind of want to name them for you, though.
Scary,
first.
Very scary, and not scary at all.
The three Spice Girls. So we've got, I'll just name them for you, and then you can decide out of these three. So we've got Garden State, if you want to see me get irate about
Garden
a movie.
State, I'll get irate.
Then if you want to go down the magic realism route, we've got The Lake House.
I haven't seen that.
So it's a remake of a previous film. We'll be watching the American version. Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock both own a house, but interesting magic stuff.
Cool.
I won't say more than that.
And Keanu.
And then finally, down the sort of indie emotional comedy drama route, Dan in Real Life.
I've not seen that either.
Which is, do you know Dan in Real Life? Is Steve Carell.
Steve Carell.
Yeah.
I've seen a poster and it's just his face.
That's how you know it's good.
Yeah. The two out of those three I've not seen, but I really am tempted to go with the one I've seen, which is Garden State, because I want to hear you get irate. So let's do that.
Cool, man. We'll go with Garden State then.
Yep. And then we can park those others for.
Yeah, we'll talk.
Although we are
getting
close to Christmas. So.
Yeah, we'll talk about the other two probably the other side of Christmas sometime.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's Garden State it up a notch then.
All right. So the only other thing to mention is the trailer for the new Sonic movie, which looks awesome.
Yeah, it's got a new design, and I hope all of the people that worked horrendous hours to get all the animation sorted for the new model get paid lots of money. And I hope everyone who complained about it, who now says that it looks good, goes to see it.
Yeah. I genuinely, but even just the animation aside, like, it looks fun. It looks like a really enjoyable and kind of stupid but brilliant movie. And Jim Carrey looks amazing in it.
Yes. Yeah. So, particularly if you're one of those people that got angry about the initial design and are happy now, please go and see it in the cinema, because people work very hard to make you happy. And the least you could do is go and watch it.
Yes, absolutely. Give Jim Carrey your money. Give Sonic your money.
Give Sonic your money.
Yep, he needs it, because he didn't come to this planet with any money.
No, he's got rings. He's got loads of rings, but no cash. Mario's loaded because he's collecting coins all the time.
Yeah,
but
he is Sonic, rich AF.
Sonic ain't got that.
Yeah, he's the poor relation. No, but genuinely, it looks great. I'm excited.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right. Well, in that case, I mean, just to say thank you very much for listening. Really appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind as much as we did. Love to hear from you on the Twitter at BigBoysDon'tPod, on emails BigBoysDon'tCryPodcast@gmail.com. Drop us a line. Why not? What would you like to erase from your memory? We can't guarantee that we can do it for you, but we'll maybe come up with a film that hints that you might be able to in the future.
Yeah, what would you erase if you had the chance? Would you erase it, or would you choose not to?
Yeah. What would you do?
If I sang out of tune.
I'd get up and stop recording this podcast.
Alrighty then.
So let's do that. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.